Welcome back, and thank you for joining me for another MiningStockEducation.com expert interview. I'm Bill Powers, your host. With me on the line is Brian London to discuss what's going on in the gold market, the role of education in the investor's life, and the upcoming New Orleans Investment Conference. With his four decades of experience in the investment markets, Brian London serves as the president and CEO of Jefferson Financial, a highly regarded publisher of market analyses and producer of investment-oriented events. Under the Jefferson Financial umbrella, Brian publishes and edits Gold Newsletter, a cornerstone of precious metals advisory since 1971. Brian is also the host of the popular New Orleans Investment Conference, which brings together a unique blend of sought-after speakers to discuss geopolitics, macroeconomics, investing, and more. Brian, thanks for coming on the program with me.
Great to be with you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Brian, thousands look to you for understanding what's going on in the gold markets and also for resource picks. Could you share with listeners your journey of how you came to focus on gold and resource stocks and how you became the editor of the Gold Newsletter?
Sure. I started off working for Jim Blanchard in 1985 as a junior copywriter. And Jim was an icon in the hard money slash gold movement. He was called the original gold bug, in fact. And he had started Gold Newsletter in 1971, literally on the day that Nixon announced that he was closing the gold window, which was the last vestige of convertibility of the dollar into gold. So when Nixon made that announcement in 1971 that he was temporarily suspending the convertibility of dollars into gold, Jim knew that it was going to be nothing but everything but temporary. He knew that it would allow for unrestrained spending and debt creation by the U.S. government and money creation. So he decided to start advocating for the return of gold ownership, legal gold ownership to American citizens. A lot of people don't realize, but it was illegal for American citizens to own gold back then outside of jewelry or rare coins. So he started Gold Newsletter to start advocating and lobbying for this. And he, along with the help of a number of colleagues, were successful in getting gold ownership legalized in 1974. And then he started an investment conference to teach American investors how to invest in gold. That conference has been going on ever since, and it's come to be called the New Orleans Investment Conference, celebrating its 43rd anniversary at this year's event this fall. So as I mentioned, I started working for Jim in 1985 as a junior copywriter and eventually ended up by the early 90s kind of running the investment conference and gold newsletter for him. And Jim passed away in 1999. And after a couple of years, I ended up buying the remainder of the business that I didn't already own from the estate and have been running it and owning it ever since.
Before you worked for Jim, were you planning on focusing on gold and resource stocks, or did you just happen to come into that via working for Jim?
Kind of just came into it through working, being exposed to that sector through working with Jim. But as I started off working and got to know Jim, we realized that we shared a lot of common interests, in particular an interest or an affinity toward libertarian thought. And shared a lot of similar experiences and authors, favorite authors and the like. So it was really just, you know, a wonderful example of serendipity that I came to know Jim both as a friend and as an employee and working for him. He was just an incredible personality, remarkable charisma, really helped found the entire hard money industry and just a wonderful mentor for anyone to have in the business.
Brian, earlier this year at the Metals Investor Forum, you gave your take on the current gold market. And the two takeaways I take from that is that over the long term, you're very bullish and the fundamentals are there. but you made mention of the short term and the near term. Uncertainty was the adjective you used a couple times. Right now, where we are, we're in August of 2017. What's your current outlook for gold and the gold shares for the remainder of this year?
Well, I think we're in a rebound right now. We very recently had a correction in gold's little rally that had started at since the beginning of July. And what I think is remarkable about the gold market is that while it's rising in kind of a stair step pattern and it's not blowing the doors off of the market at all in any respect, it is finding ways to rise slowly but surely. What's happening is something that isn't really revealed in the technical charts or really through fundamental analysis of any sort. What's happening is that gold seems to be finding excuses to rise. That's an important distinction. Over my many years in the market, I've seen in gold and in other asset classes where a commodity or an asset falls on seemingly bullish news. In other words, it's finding an excuse for investors are finding excuses to sell rather than buy. What we're seeing with gold is that investors are finding reasons to buy even on supposedly bearish news. If the Fed, for example, decides to hike rates as it has been doing, gold still manages to rise because investors are finding some reason within that context that's bullish for gold, some reason to buy. We saw earlier this year when we had higher inflation numbers that investors were saying, well, this is finally the retail price inflation that's a result of quantitative easing, and this is a reason to buy. So they did. Then we saw inflation fall, and investors then looked at that and said, well, this will stay the Fed's hand on rate hikes for a while. So that, again, is a reason to buy gold. So it seems like gold wants to rise, and that any new data point or a significant piece of economic news is interpreted as a reason, or is eventually interpreted as a reason to buy gold. I think that's very important that it has that kind of underpinning that really isn't being shown in the charts right now and isn't being shown in any kind of analysis of why investors should be buying gold.
And would you say that the primary catalyst or driver of the gold price now is economic rather than geopolitical?
Well, normally, almost always, it is economic. Geopolitical issues tend to affect gold only in short bursts, and they're not any real reason that I've ever recommended that anyone should buy gold. First off, there's no logical reason to buy gold if there is some kind of a geopolitical issue. Gold is a monetary instrument. It is money. It is a way to protect against government degradation of the currency, and that should be the real reason and only long-term reason to buy gold. But these short-term geopolitical flashpoints, they tend to come and go so quickly and resolve themselves so quickly that investors buying on those kinds of issues typically end up holding the bag. We are in a bit of a new environment, though, in that instead of these geopolitical issues being like waves crashing on a beach, we've seen kind of a rising tide of uncertainty and concern in the world that's come with Donald Trump's election. You know, for better or worse, and I think there's a bit of both, a good bit of both, but for better or worse, the world is concerned. There's a lot more volatility, at least politically, if not in the markets. And I think this kind of undercurrent of concern in the markets has helped buoy gold over the longer term, a much longer term than you normally see for geopolitical influences.
Since gold turned in late December 2015, I've heard people use the analogy of a nine-inning baseball game, and then the question is asked, where do you think we are in the nine-inning baseball game if the first inning was back in December of 2015, and how far do you expect gold to rise? I've heard Rick Rule say we're in the third inning. I recently heard a gold mining CEO say he believes we're in the first inning. What inning would you place us in this particular upcycle in gold?
Well, that's a great question, considering that I look at this as being much like 2002 or 2003. I would say we're probably around the second inning, considering that that bull run that began around – actually began in 2000, 2001. Considering that that went essentially until 2011, I'd say we're probably in the second inning, if not even earlier. Rick tends to be a bit more pessimistic in these kinds of things. I probably tend more toward the optimistic. I think we've got a long way to go, frankly.
What would that ninth inning look like? I interviewed somebody this year that offered me a new perspective, and that perspective was that, yes, we're in a gold bull market. However, this particular fundamental analysis did not see a new all-time high in gold. Most people I've listened to do see a new all-time high in gold. In this particular upcycle, what would be your perspective and expectation regarding the peak gold price with this upcycle?
Well, if you're talking about an all-time high, I assume you're talking about an inflation-adjusted high, which would be around, I believe, $2,650 or so right now. As compared, the inflation-adjusted number, for instance, as compared to $850 in 1980. I think we could get to that very easily. And the reason is that there are long-term factors at play here that make it absolutely inevitable that gold prices are going to rise much higher. And that's really the unprecedented level of debt that in the United States and really in every developed nation, and sovereign debt and in every developed nation in the West and some in the East. Particularly Japan, this level of debt necessitates the eventual depreciation of fiat currencies, not only the dollar, but also the euro, the pound, the yen. They all have to be devalued, and there is a competitive devaluation going on amongst them. But if every currency out there has to be devalued to decrease the value or the cost of their debt, then they have to be devalued against some other standard. And that standard, of course, is gold. So if you look at it from that standpoint, and that we have unprecedented levels of debt, then we should also correspondingly have an unprecedented level of relative level of gold value in relation to those currencies. So I think that we will definitely get over $2,600 on the next big run. However far that takes us in both time and degree.
Very good explanation. The gold newsletter focuses not only on gold stocks, but also on various resource stocks. Zinc, copper, cobalt, uranium are hot topics and hot commodities amongst investors that I've heard in the recent years. What are your perspective on some of the hot commodities, and what are you most bullish on and why?
Well, you mentioned four there that I like. Uranium, I think, it's inevitable that we'll have significantly higher uranium prices, although I've been saying that for the last few years and it hasn't happened yet. So it's been frustrating to me and a lot of other analysts. I think copper has been surprising in recent weeks with its rally. It's knocking up against $3 and and that, again, is something that's somewhat inexplicable. Historically, copper is known for forecasting economic strength. And really, the big story for copper is China. And I think copper is telling us something about Chinese economic growth that's not being widely recognized as yet. Zinc and cobalt are rising as well. Zinc for supply-demand reasons that are fairly well known. Cobalt is the next big thing that's starting, has been going on for about the last year, but it's really starting to get widespread attention. And we focus on those things and those commodities as well in Gold Newsletter, where we see opportunities.
Are there any particular companies that you would like to share with listeners that you're really excited about?
Well, in copper, we've been recommending Trilogy Metals for some time. It has an Alaskan project that is really two deposits, and features what we like to say Congo level grades of copper, but in a safe jurisdiction. Now that jurisdiction is somewhat remote, and it's awaiting some infrastructure development, in particular a road that will be built by the state. But that construction of that road seems to be assured, and once that happens, it will make the economics really work. So I like Trilogy Metals in copper, particularly. In cobalt, it's one of those things where there are a number of companies trying to get out there and get their names in the sector and putting cobalt in the company name, et cetera, some of which are really not doing real work on real projects. I'm currently reviewing a couple of cobalt opportunities. I haven't quite gone over the top yet with a recommendation, but that may come shortly in Gold Newsletter, particularly for one company I'm looking at.
Could you share your thoughts regarding the ongoing need for education in the resource investor's life? Rick Rule has said that one of the reasons why he's been so successful is that there's a knowledge or information arbitrage that he's consistently been able to take advantage of due to the caliber of his competition. What are your thoughts on the need for ongoing education in the resource investor's life?
Well, Rick's correct, and it's absolutely vital in this sector. You know, I get so many people coming to me, as you would imagine, with the New Orleans conference and with a newsletter called Gold Newsletter, asking how to get involved. And what I tell them is to study it. You know, first off, buy some physical metals to get that base, get that foundation laid. And it's fairly easy to get up to speed enough to establish that foundation. But if you're going to delve into the much more speculative and complicated area of mining stocks, particularly junior exploration and development stocks, you really have to study the sector and get a working knowledge of it. One great way to do that is to spend the money to subscribe to the half dozen or so top newsletters out there. And subscribing to these newsletters and reading them quite literally for just a few months will go a long way toward educating you on how to invest in the sector. We also publish a free report called The Investor's Guide to Gold and Silver. It's available for download on our websites, goldnewsletter.com and neworleansconference.com. If I say so myself, it's a great objective, independent look at what you need to know to invest in the sector. And it in itself will lay a good foundation for investing. The other thing is attending conferences. The New Orleans Conference, of course, is widely recognized as one of the best, if not the best, out there. But there are other ones as well, other resource conferences. Rick Rule has a wonderful one that he just concluded, the Sprott Conference in Vancouver. But attending these conferences where you can not only learn about the sector and particular companies, but also talk to the management teams of the companies, look them in the eye, ask them the hard questions, follow up with their answers of more questions, and get a level of trust or lack thereof with the company, so you can separate the wheat from the chaff and find which ones are at least making an honest effort toward exploring projects and building shareholder value. There is a certain degree of luck involved in the exploration sector, but this can also be handled through proper strategies of diversification and trying to get a number of the higher potential opportunities with the hopes that one or two will really pay off, because as has been proven in this sector, hitting a winner means that you can multiply your money by 5, 10 or more times over by getting in early on a good expiration stock that is successful. And one or two of those pay up for a lot of misses. So education's vitally important in this sector, more important, I think, than just about any other sector of investing.
At PDAC in Toronto this year, I was able to interview and chat with Adrian Day, who's a frequent speaker at the New Orleans Investment Conference. And in speaking with Adrian, he did share with me that your conference is one of his favorites, if not his favorite. Could you share with listeners the benefit of attending this year's New Orleans Investment Conference and why you bring together a unique focus on macroeconomics, politics, and investing?
Well, you know, we've been at it longer than just about anybody else, and we have a rich history, a rich legacy. The conferences, although we're all free market anarcho-capitalists and the like, the New Orleans Conference primary raison d'etre is not to make money, as to keep this grand event going and true to its longstanding principles. And a lot of these people who are really among the best in the world as far as analyzing this sector, analyzing the economy and geopolitical effects on the metals and mining, people like Adrian Day, like Rick Rule, have been coming to our conference for literally decades. And they tend to save their top recommendations for this event. They want to make a big splash at our conference and have a better track record or a more profitable pick than anyone else. And I was just going back and forth over email with Doug Casey and his topic, his speech topic for this year, and you know, wondering what he's going to say and trying to figure out, as Doug likes to do, how best to make the audience uncomfortable with his worldview, but also give them some guidelines and insights into the future that they can profit from. So, you know, we have this base of regular speakers who cover metals mining and then, like I say, the bigger trends that affect them and come out with specific picks. But we also are known for having big name speakers that none of the other conferences do. And people who are bigger names, sometimes controversial, but can give really insightful analyses into the geopolitical and economic trends. This year, for example, we're featuring Tucker Carlson, who's quite a firebrand on Fox in attacking the left, quite frankly. Charles Krauthammer is one of the smartest guys out there as far as being a geopolitical commentator, and he's coming again. He's a regular at our event and likes to spend a lot of time mingling with the attendees outside of the general session hall. We have Robert Kiyosaki, who has just enormous following among investors, primarily in real estate investors, but really any investor who's looking to establish independence and protect their wealth. Robert is looking forward to coming this year. He says, as much as anything, to sit in the audience and take notes. He's been so impressed with our speaker roster. We have Jonah Goldberg, a fascinating and entertaining commentator for National Review and Fox News. We have Judy Shelton this year making her first appearance. She's a longstanding voice in advocating for gold as a, if not a gold standard, but gold as an anchor point in the U.S. currency system. She's a founder or co-founder of the Sound Money Project, and I believe has an inside track into a Federal Reserve appointment by the Trump administration. So she, through her, I think we're going to get an advanced look at what may be the Federal Reserve Board of the future.
I've heard you say concerning Judy that she could even possibly ascend to the Fed chair position, and I perused over her Twitter account, and she was posting things regarding central bank transparency and gold-backed currencies. So do you think the powers that be would allow her to ascend to that place when you would have the Fed chair advocating central bank transparency and a gold-backed currency?
Well, we can only hope, can't we? Yeah, you make a good point. It would be a bit of an uphill climb. But the one thing about Judy Shelton is she's not or has never been, you know, kind of a hair and fire anarchist. And she's always been very mainstream, but always strongly pushing for these views. And she served in a number of prestigious capacities in government and private industry. So she's a commanding presence, and if anyone can do it, then I think she's the one.
Well said. And I noticed you also have speakers, Chris Martinson from Peak Prosperity. So that's more of the preparation focus. Like you said, you have a wide range of speakers that bring together that really offers the attendees a really holistic perspective. I mean, you're probably the only resource investment conference that ever had Margaret Thatcher speak at, I saw in your past.
Yeah, Margaret Thatcher and Ayn Rand and Barry Goldwater. And, you know, we've had Alan Greenspan a few times, most recently a few years ago. It's really the, you know, the legacy of this event. And like I said, we really try very hard to keep it going and true to this legacy. So it's, you know, we try to make money, but the money we make on the event is really to keep this thing going, and delivering this kind of value, this kind of special value and special experience that nothing else offers out there. It has to be seen to be believed. It has to be experienced to be understood. And once people come to this event, they understand it, they get it, and they come again and again. And you know, we're glad to have them. We hope we can get more people to come this year and see what it's all about.
Brian, before you leave, are there any other concluding thoughts regarding the upcoming conference or investing in general that you would like to share with listeners?
Yeah, I guess that the biggest point, and the one that I make in all my presentations and in some conferences that aren't so much gold-oriented but more mainstream-oriented, is that you absolutely have to be invested in this sector these days. There is the inevitability of much higher gold prices, the level of debt that has been created, particularly in the United States, is so large that it cannot be addressed through tax cuts. It cannot be addressed through economic growth. It cannot be, when I say tax cuts, I mean tax hikes, economic growth, or budget cuts. All of these are politically impossible or mathematically impossible to address the level of debt that's already been created. What's going to happen is what has happened in every other civilization that's gotten itself into this situation throughout human history. The currency has to be depreciated. The currency has to be devalued so the cost of that debt goes down correspondingly. And when that happens, as always, the only thing that it can be depreciated against is gold, gold and silver, frankly. But both of those, investors absolutely have to protect themselves and potentially profit from this secular trend that is absolutely inevitable and irreversible at this point.
For the listener that's interested in learning more and attending the New Orleans Conference, you can go to neworleansconference.com, and this upcoming conference will be held October 25th through the 28th this year in the city, of course, of New Orleans. Brian, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you, William.
Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.